2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Never seen the sky so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
The KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chalaos, Ton Bettis with you this morning. We will be taking your calls in just a couple of minutes, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. And Ton, this morning, we're going to get into our WaterWise talk. I wanted to say speech. We're going to get into our WaterWise speech here, Ton. But today we're talking about a bush instead of giving tips on being WaterWise.
Yeah, I think for a while, we've been there, done that with the tips, and I thought this was a great direction to go.
Okay, let's jump into it.
WaterWise Tips at 10 with the KSL Greenhouse Show. We save you time, money, and work in your yard and garden.
We had a great time up at the USU Botanical Gardens with Sheridan Hansen, and we did a series of videos. And one of those was on the blacklace elderberry, because they have really a beautiful one there.
They do. Blacklace elderberry has been on the market for 15 or 20 years now. In horticulture terms, that's relatively new still. So the older you get, it's even anyway. So
back to that age.
It's thing. One that has been introduced that is more sun tolerant than Japanese maple. And it also seems to do well in all sorts of different kinds of soils, as long as they're not super salty.
Mm-hmm.
And so the blacklace elderberry, once it gets established, will only need to be deep watered to a depth of around a foot to maybe 18 inches about every other week, which is pretty good. And so you can, if you know drip and kind of get the kinks worked out a little bit, pun not intended there, you can put some emitters on it, some bubblers or just drip, and it's perfectly happy. And it's relatively pest-free.
Right. Looks a little bit like the Japanese lace leaf because the leaves are the same.
Yes, they're that lacy leaf.
But they're a different color.
They are. So they're a little bit darker. And I don't think that, as far as saying it's a Japanese maple replacement, it's not. It's not as refined and it has a different growth habit. But I think they're still pretty.
Right. It doesn't grow in the same. The Japanese maple looks more like a tree. And this looks more like a bush.
And that's, yeah, it's what it is a bush. But if you need color, you know, especially through the year in an area that, you know, as long as the soil isn't swampy and have salt in it, it will grow.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can just plant it. It grows quickly. You can use renewal pruning on it to where you're taking 20% of the branches out toward the base every year after, you know, you start on year four or five. And this is just one that's really low maintenance. Plus, it will get some elderberries on it that in the fall, if you want to process them into a syrup or jams or whatever, they're very useful for that.
Right. It was really fun being out at the Botanical Gardens. We just got so many great ideas. Well, I got so many great ideas. You've been there a number of times. I've only been there a couple of times.
Well, it's fun getting a different perspective, because even though, you know, we filmed with Sheridan, her background in horticulture is completely different than mine. And so we have the same book knowledge, but her practical experience is in herbs, succulents, high tunnels, and those, you know, general areas, to where mine is more fruit production and yards and gardens. Getting her perspective on a lot of these things and seeing how she implements them as compared to how I would do is just so fascinating.
And boy, if you want ideas about your garden, things to grow, go check out the Edible Garden. It's really fascinating to go out and see the different things that we can grow that most of us don't ever think of growing. And we're going to have a video up soon showing you all the different things that she's been growing this year in the Edible Garden.
So yeah, it was great to be out there. And the elderberry is available from most local garden centers. If you can't find it now, it'll be available in the spring. It's quite common.
Okay. Anything else we need to know about it?
Just make sure that you put it in an area that it has enough room. Sheridan prunes hers, it looks like, to keep it down to 7 or 8 feet. But if you let it go, it'll get 12 feet high and wide. Oh. Mm-hmm. And so you need to put it in an area that it can grow, or you're going to need to use that renewal pruning.
Okay. And you can check out the video right now on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. If you don't have Facebook, you can go to YouTube and check out the KSL Greenhouse channel there as well and see this beautiful bush, this beautiful water-wise bush. And we have many other videos, too, up on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page and on the YouTube channel. You know, she helped us with low tunnels and high tunnels. And, boy, if you want to extend your gardening season, you want to check out one of those videos as well. We are coming back with your calls and questions. We have a number of people lined up right now. We'll get to you as quickly as possible. Number to call, 801-575-8255. Text us at 57500.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you, taking your calls, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. Don and Roy would like to know, Ton. He says he and his wife have noticed an increase in snails in their garden and backyard, and they want to know what to do to get rid of them.
Turn my microphone on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Snails are usually a water issue.
Yeah, snails are usually, you have an increase of water or the habitat is improved, so there's lots of foliage, more shade, so it's cooler. So those snails like humidity. They like to be out of high winds. So if you've recently put down some sort of ground covers or mulches and things, they may need to be taken out. Now, there are snail baits that do work fairly well. There are some organic snail baits that are pet safe. I believe Sluggo is one of the brands, or some competitors. And then there's also non-organic snail baits that I think are a little more effective, but they're also potentially a little more potent. So you can make your decisions there, but short term they could try some of those baits, but then look at the habitat to see if they can modify it to reduce the attractiveness to the snails.
All right. John is in Sandy. Good morning, John. What is your question this morning?
I have two areas of questions. One, I'm trying to put in 3 peach trees. I'd like to do a dwarf or semi-dwarf, and I'd like them to be freestone. What would you recommend for a tree, and how would you prepare the soil to plant them?
Well, as far as varieties, anything that ripens from Red Haven later is going to be freestone on the homeowner market. just because that's what the homeowners want. So that's not really too much of a concern. And so as far as soil preparation, with your sandy soil, you don't really need to do much. Just put the tree in the ground and let it grow. I think your bigger concern is going to be maintaining the tree to keep greater peach tree borer out so that, you know, 5 years down the road, you have this beautiful tree and all of a sudden it dies because it wasn't maintained.
Okay, how do you maintain a tree properly then?
I would subscribe. I mean, that's kind of like asking, you know, how do I drive a car? Explain it to me over the radio. You know, and
sure.
So I would subscribe to the USU.
I mean, just fertilizers and stuff like that, or what?
Subscribe to the USU Pest Lab updates, and they will give you on the pest end what to look for, when to spray. They'll give you recommendations if you want to do it organically or using conventional systems. But if you Google USU Pest Lab and then fruit updates and you want to subscribe, that'll bring it up. So subscribe to that. And then as far as fruit trees, USU has fact sheets on peaches and most other major fruit that we grow here that you can look up. And then there's also USU's Home Orchard Pest Management Guide you can look at. So, but it's one of those things that it's kind of like riding a bike. You just have to climb on and try it. And you may make a few mistakes, but with attending pruning classes, say at Conservation Garden Park in early spring, looking at those pest lab updates, I think that it's very doable.
And you'd suggest a Red Haven then?
Red Haven would be fine. It ripens in late July, but if you wanted something a little later, early Alberta is great. Angelus is another good one. O. Henry. There's so many good peaches out there.
Okay. The second area is I have an area that I can plant that's west of some tall pine trees, so it gets maybe half a day of sun. What would you recommend I plant in there as a tree or a garden?
Well, as long as you're getting between 6 and 8 hours of sunlight, you can pretty much do what you need to. So they wouldn't, you know, do quite as well as in full sun, but you could grow some fruit trees in there or grow a garden, and they would do okay.
So anything, strawberries and stuff like that?
Those would be fine. Sure. Anything that you would grow in full sun, you can put in that location.
Okay. What about deer? I've got a lot of deer.
Fence. Or else you either have to have an 8-foot fence. And what I'll tell people to do, because it's so expensive, is you can even use temporary fencing, like the T-posts and chicken wire or whatever it is, but it needs to be 8 feet tall. And so I recommend people fence off their garden and orchard area so you don't need to do the entire yard. And that's far less expensive, and you can get the materials from Home Depot or IFA, wherever you like to shop. Otherwise, you need to spray a repellent according to label, which will be every week to every 3 weeks, depending. And so it's either fence or tolerate it or spray the repellents and then switch up what you're using.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for your call this morning. Question about the dwarf fruit trees. So I have had both a dwarf peach and apricot. And is it true that they have a shorter lifespan?
No, I think it's just more maintenance. If you have a dwarf tree.
Okay, so that's where I failed.
The fruit load that you get on it is overwhelming to the tree sometimes. And so they need to be thinned. Mm-hmm. What I will tell people, if they want a true dwarf peach, they're what are called genetic dwarf peaches, and those will only get between 6 and 8 feet tall, and they do give you a pretty good peach. It would probably be a clingstone, but if you're just eating them, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can cut them off to can too if you want. And so you can get online, and if you search genetic dwarf peaches, there's 10 or 15 varieties out there. Now, most of the peaches that people call dwarf have just been grafted, and the true term is semi-dwarf, and they get 15 to 20 feet.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
So if you're growing Red Haven or Alberta or Angelus, O. Henry, those will be on a semi-dwarfing rootstock, and they will get bigger.
Okay, so good to know. Next person wanted to know, was there an apricot season this year? They didn't see any.
A lot of our apricots were hit with frost, and so we didn't have a whole lot. Apricots will ripen, depending on the variety, from late June through September.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just that the frost got most of them this year.
Okay. Also, what would cause rust spots on a weeping redbud?
I'd need to see pictures. It could be anything from splash, from an herbicide, or, you know, hail. It just, there's not enough information for me to really go on because redbuds are not prone to rust diseases.
Okay, so the best thing to do would be to send a picture on Messenger to the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page, and we'll have a better idea there. Let's go to David, who is in Lytton. Good morning, David. What is your question?
Hi, I planted a sweet cherry tree late May, early June. The advice I got was that it was developing a fungal disease. All the leaves were getting blotchy and then slowly turning brown and dying, so that by around the end of June, July, the leaves were all off the tree and it looked pretty darn dead. I treated it with a systemic fungicide, but it still looked pretty dead. Now, around the 1st of August, I've got about 5 or 6 fronds of small leaves now sprouting out, and they look really pretty healthy, although the leaves are small, with some buds that look like they're about to emerge. So my question is, what are the odds that this tree still has enough time to store energy and produce buds and will live another year?
50-50, probably, just because it's so late. If they were re-leafing in early July, I would be pretty confident. But to where we're almost in September, there's only a month at most for it to get energy. So did you buy your tree from an independent garden center or a box store?
Yeah, it was from a box store.
Okay, so if you still have your receipt, you might be able to return it. But
yeah.
It's so late in the season that I don't know. I can't really say either way. There's probably a 50-50 chance it'll re-leaf in the spring.
Okay. I guess I'll leave it alone. It can't hurt to leave it alone. It's too late to buy a new one. There aren't any available.
No, they're not. So. And so I would leave it alone, especially if you got it bare root and didn't pay a lot. It is worth leaving.
Yeah. Okay, very good. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for your call this morning. Next person said, after listening to how to determine what is causing dead spots, they've determined they have a fungus. How should they treat that fungus?
They need to know which they have. And so I would send some samples up to the USU Pest Lab, let them go through and see what they find, and then you can get the fact sheets on what to do for it, because treatment for a lot of these fungal diseases will be different. And so I can't just say put a fungicide down in spring when it's consistently 70, because it may or may not do any good.
Okay. Next listener is John in Ogden. Good morning, John. How can we help you?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, go right ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, so actually I text really about the crepe myrtle near the house, since that's obviously a very bad idea. I wonder what would be a good idea for like another replacement that would be like a crepe myrtle. Currently we have maybe a 25-foot, who knows how old, juniper tree that's just overgrown, and I want to get rid of it and replace it with something different that's prettier and just more fun.
Well, there's the crepe myrtle, for listeners who are unfamiliar, is a tree that is grown in warmer climates that blooms from July to October. And they're gorgeous blossoms, and we are just too cold in the winter by about 10 degrees for it to survive reliably. And there are people that have them. And so as far as something that's comparable with a pretty bark and the whole package, there just isn't as far as what that tree does. Now, there are trees that would work that would be pretty, but you're looking at more of a spring blossoming tree that would blossom for 2 or 3 weeks and then it's done.
Okay. I guess I'm even open to those, I guess. I mean,
yeah. And so, listener earlier mentioned Royal Raindrops crabapple, spring snow crabapple. Those are both fairly clean trees. You could look at some of the flowering cherries. They aren't as long lived, but they're quite pretty. You know, Quanzan flowering cherry. So there are many out there, but it's just the crepe myrtles are one of those dream trees that until we get global warming to warm us up more, which I'm not hoping for, by the way, we're just not going to be able to grow here.
No, yeah. Makes sense. Google just failed me. I saw it and I thought, hey, that looks pretty.
Yeah, so. And you'll see them in the garden centers that are hardier varieties, but it's a hobby thing and it's bragging rights to claim you have one. And the ones that I see that are mature in most situations in northern Utah look like they've been beaten with a baseball bat.
Not good.
So.
Okay.
All right, John. Thanks. Good luck to you. We need to break for the bottom of the hour news. You can call us with your questions, 801-575-8255, or text us at 57500.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.